I don't believe that we actually descended from apes.
I do not believe that in any way, shape, or form we descended from apes.
I didn't believe that till I met my uncle who had more back hair than I have facial hair. So yeah, I kind of believe that now.
That's a scene from the documentary film Flock of Dodos. The man who made the film, Randy Olson, has a few thoughts on why evolutionary thinking has run into so much resistance. He says it's because of the arrogance of scientists. Now, I should point out that Olson is himself a scientist, a Harvard-trained evolutionary biologist who's firmly in the camp of evolutionary theory. But his film ridicules the condescending attitude of scientists. It also attacks the intelligent design movement, which Olson says is riddled with contradictions.
The Mount Rushmore example that they use, they don't explain very well at times. And in fact, even in the film, Michael Behe was one of the main guys using that. I let him explain it. He didn't do a very good job. I went ahead and put it in there so people can see how confusing this stuff is.
If you're walking by the Rocky Mountains and somebody asked you how they got there, you'd probably just say plate tectonics or erosion or some such thing. But if you walked by Mount Rushmore and somebody asked you how that got there, you'd immediately say, well, somebody carved that. You can, by the physical features of the mountain, you can detect the effects of intelligent activity. Intelligent design is the idea these days that we can detect the effects of intelligence in life. In effect, we see Mount Rushmores in the cell.
But the idea there is that a natural mountainside, you don't see the presence of a hand at work designing it. In Mount Rushmore, suddenly you can see there is this pattern there that you can recognize. But again, it's based on our human preconceptions, and that's why I ended up with that Dover school board member as he was trying to run through Behe's presentation. And I just kept saying to him, yeah, but this is a human designer at work. You've got this hypothesis of what design looks like based on your concepts of what humans make when they make designs. Had Mount Rushmore been carved in the shape of some sort of Precambrian gelatinous organisms that we don't normally recognize, it could very well have been designed, but you'd look at it and think, well, that's not designed because it doesn't look like any creature that I know.
Well, this actually raises the other interesting point. You call your film The Flock of Dodos, and it isn't entirely clear who you mean when you're talking about that. It's not necessarily the intelligent design people, because they come off in many ways as having a strong grasp of public relations. Scientists, in your film and others, don't seem to have this same easy grasp of public relations. Is it really just that simple that scientists don't know how to tell people what they know?
Okay, 3 points relevant to this. Number one, I used to be a scientist. I got tenure as a professor at the University of New Hampshire. I used to be an academic, and I used to walk around looking at people saying, you're all stupid. And I know what that perspective is like as an academic. Then I changed my life. I moved to Hollywood, and I ended up in a 2-year acting program. And one of the things, the fundamental rules we learned in that acting program was never rise above. Whenever you rise above in any given scene, the audience will always sympathize with the person being risen above. That was ground in our heads so solidly as one of the firm basic principles of acting. And then a year ago, as I began reading about this intelligent design issue and seeing some of these blog posts where these evolutionists get on these blogs, and I mean, they're still even doing it to me. Evolutionists are writing me emails about how stupid I am with this movie, that I don't understand how this stuff works. And it's really a human constraint of academics. They get so caught up in their perspective that they develop this kind of intolerance and rising above. And that's a symptom that I saw. And I just know, as a basic fundamental principle of communication, it is not effective. And it's gone on in a lot of places. And it's gone on in Kansas, where a lot of the best evolutionists have shown up there and condescended to the general public about, you people are so stupid with all your crazy ideas here. And it's just not that simple.
Well, of course, you showed some of that off in the poker game that recurs throughout the film. There are a number of academics who get together, clearly very bright men, and also clearly people that you'd probably like. But there was a fair amount of arrogance there as well.
Absolutely. And the arrogance was all 8 members of the poker game, including myself. I mean, that is a bunch of academics for you.
This is a big controversy, because some people think the Earth was created 6,000 years ago, contrary to all the physical and geological evidence. And because a small number of people who, frankly, are yahoos, who know nothing, are ignoramuses, they really do not understand modern science. Because of that, public education is interfered with. Now, one should never mock people's religious beliefs, and I certainly don't believe in doing that. I think that it's not my position. It's not my position to persuade people you shouldn't believe in God or you should believe in God. But when they come into the scientific arena and they start saying things that are manifestly wrong, that are manifestly ignorant, I think people have to stand up and say, you know, you're an idiot.
The poker game ends up being the most wonderful part of the whole film. I didn't anticipate that that attitude would arise from the thing. But a lot of that attitude is not even so much what is said during the poker game. It's how it's being said. It's the tone of voice. It's the style. It's the whole condescension of all of the people at the table. And it's very characteristic of the situation, the plight of academics today.
One of the things that's clear about your filmmaking style is that you enjoy laughing. It's pretty funny on all sides of this. And I gather you felt it was pretty important to use humor in dealing with a serious subject.
Well, if you watch the film, you'll see that the number one star of the whole film is my mother, Muffy Moose. And in so many of the screenings, people have stood up afterwards and just said, you know, I just want to say the best character in your film is your mother. And it is true. She is a very broad-minded person. One of the things I've come to realize is there are three voices in the film. There is the intelligent designers, there's the evolutionists, and then there's Muffy Moose, who really is the voice of the broad, only semi-interested and enlightened general public. And she's the one that most people seem to connect with in the broader audience. But what's also fascinating that dawned on us just a few weeks ago is that of those three voices, only one of them is searching. The evolutionists feel they've got it all figured out. The intelligent designers feel they've got it all figured out. And all my mother keeps saying through the movie is, I have no idea what's going on. I'm still searching. I'm looking into witchcraft and UFOs and all these other sorts of crazy things, and I'm just looking for some answers. And I think that's one thing that people connect with also with her a lot. And it, of course, at the end of the film, she reveals that her newest interest is Buddhism. So she is constantly exploring, and I think a lot of people admire that.
I'm kind of thinking about studying Buddhism now, because, you know, they believe in these things and they have a great philosophy. They have a happy philosophy. They probably have the happiest philosophy I've heard yet. So I might do a little studying on that one.
Why do you believe it?
Well, I like what they're saying about look forward to the next life. Don't agonize over death. You know, come on, let's get with the program. The flower blooms, lives, and dies, and then goes on. Where does it go? Well, I think they have a nice theory. It goes on to have another life.
A scene from the documentary film Flock of Dodos. I talked with the film's creator, evolutionary biologist Randy Olson.